This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Good afternoon. It's Sunday, April 7th, 2024, and for the next hour, we will be bringing you news from the Worcester Sunday Telegram and Gazette. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. This is Alita, reading with Mike, live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And Mike will begin with the obituaries.
Beginning with Barbara M. Braley, age 83, of Paxton, passed away on March 29th. Arrangements will be handled by the Miles Funeral Home in Holden. Joseph Vernon Bruneau, age 91, of Worcester, passed away on March 30th. Arrangements to be handled at the Kelly Cremation and Funeral Care. Anne Marie Conti, age 69, of Shrewsbury, passed away on April 1st. Arrangements by Britton Shrewsbury Funeral Home. Service time will be April 16th at 11 a.m. at St. Anne's Church in Shrewsbury. Velma E. Davio of Worcester passed away on April 3rd. Arrangements by Mercandante Funeral Home. Service time will be April 9th at 11 o'clock a.m. at St. Anne's Church of Shrewsbury. Diane T. Slavinskas de Roche of Leicester passed away on April 4th. Arrangements by Mercandante Funeral Home. Service will be April 10th at 10 o'clock a.m. at St. Bernard's Church. James Paul Dodge, age 78, of Florida, passed away on March 24th. Floyd I. France, Jr., age 79, of Holden, passed away on March 31st. Arrangements will be handled by Miles Funeral Home. Barbara L. Russell Jervis, age 92, of Hollis, New Hampshire, passed away on March 19th. Arrangements handled by Callahan, Fay, and Caswell. The service will be on April 12th at 11 o'clock a.m. at Sacred Heart Church. Interment will be at the Worcester County Memorial Park. Teresa Marie Giorgio, age 86, of Southbridge, passed away on April 4th. Arrangements handled by Daniel T. Morrill Funeral Home. Service will be April 11th at 12 o'clock p.m. at the funeral home. The Reverend Dr. Robert G. Gehrig, Jr., passed away at the age of 88. He is a former resident of Shrewsbury, and passed away on April 4th. Arrangements are handled by the Champa Funeral Home. The service will be on April 13th at 11 o'clock a.m. at Trinity Lutheran Church. Daniel I. Gomez of Hyannis passed away on March 1st. Arrangements to be handled by Doan, Beal & Ames Funeral Home. Elizabeth Betty Ann Gonzalez, age 87, of Spencer, passed away on March 19th. Arrangements will be handled by the J. Henry Morin and Son Funeral Home. The service will be April 20th at 12 o'clock p.m. at Evergreen Cemetery. Interment also at the cemetery. Thelma A. M. Good passed away at the age of 85 of Worcester. Arrangements will be handled by Athey Memorial Home. Service will be at 11 o'clock a.m. on April 10th at the Blessed Sacrament Church. Robert Heck of Sutton passed away at the age of 83 on April 4th. Arrangements to be handled by Mulhane Home for Funerals. Service will be on April 12th at 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Norma Lorraine Logan of Worcester passed away at the age of 86. Arrangements being handled by the Mercadante Funeral Home and Chapel. Joseph Kenneth McGilvery passed away at the age of 77. He was a resident of Worcester, and he passed away on March 28th. Arrangements will be handled by the Callahan Fay Caswell Company. Service will be on April 9th at 6:30 p.m. at Callahan Fay Caswell. Interment will be private. Doris Marengo of Worcester passed away at the age of 89 on April 2nd. Her service will be held on April 13th at 9 o'clock a.m. at Nordgren Memorial Chapel. Interment will be at Moorland Cemetery in Paxton. Mary Cargiulio Mazziello of Worcester passed away at the age of 96. Arrangements will be handled by Mercadante Funeral Home and Chapel. Kevin P. Neary of South Windsor, Connecticut, passed away on March 30th at the age of 80. Arrangements by Fay Brothers Funeral Home. Service will be April 11th at 11 o'clock a.m. at Our Lady of Good Counsel Church. Interment will be at Mount Vernon Cemetery. David E. Nordquist, Sr. of Worcester, passed away on March 31st at the age of 83. Arrangements at Miles Funeral Home. The service will be on April 11th at 10 o'clock a.m. at St. Patrick's Church. Interment will be at All Faiths Cemetery. Wanda J. Novak of Worcester passed away on April 4th at the age of 99. Arrangements by the Nordgren Memorial Chapel. Service will be on April 11th at 11 o'clock a.m. at Nordgren Memorial Chapel, and interment will be at the Worcester County Memorial Park. Marcia Stephanie Nygaard of Shrewsbury passed away on March 26th at the age of 76. Brenda M. Smith Burke of Scituate passed away on April 4th at the age of 75. Arrangements will be in Scituate. Service time will be on April 11th at 11:30 a.m. at the Immaculate Conception Church. Regine M. Reggie Stevens of Boylston passed away on March 30th at the age of 87. Arrangements by Britton Shrewsbury Funeral Home. Service will be April 10th at 11 o'clock a.m. The service will be at St. Rose of Lima Church. David Joseph Sweetman of West Boylston passed away on March 21st at the age of 92. Service will be on April 12th at 10 o'clock a.m. at Our Lady of Good Counsel Church. Hans William Thiermann of St. Petersburg, Florida, passed away on August 23rd at the age of 76. Nancy Soderberg Stake Villatura of Dublin, Ohio, passed away on April 2nd at the age of 88. Patricia Warren of Worcester passed away at the age of 77. Arrangements by Mercadante Funeral Home and Chapel. And that completes the obituaries. We'll now look at the front page. Top headline is, State Pays Legal Tab and Ethics Case, $120,000 for prosecutor. Two troopers left out. This article is by Bad Patrician of the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. The state has approved a payment for $120,000 in legal bills for a prosecutor cleared in the 2022 Ethics Commission probe surrounding the arrest of a local judge's daughter but has declined to pay for the defense of two state troopers also cleared, including the former colonel. Documents obtained by the Telegram and Gazette, pursuant to public records request, show the state comptroller's office has approved $120,000 in legal fees for Jeffrey Travers, Worcester's top assistant district attorney, to settle a lawsuit his lawyer filed against Travers' boss, Worcester District Attorney Joseph D. Early, Jr. Records show Travers' lawyer, Roy Bourgeois, sued Early in February 2023, nearly 2 years after the comptroller's office had sent Early an email opining it was, quote, not appropriate to reimburse legal fees for public employees related to administrative claims before the State Ethics Commission, unquote. Early and Travers, along with former Colonel Richard D. McKeon and Major Susan Anderson, were accused of breaking civil ethics laws regarding their handling of the 2017 arrest report of a local judge's daughter. All were cleared in 2022. The State Ethics Commission had alleged that McKeon, after speaking with Early, improperly ordered Anderson to have a state trooper who arrested a local judge's daughter prepare a sanitized version of his arrest report after it had been filed in court. That revised copy, lawyers for the commission alleged, was then delivered to Travers, who, allegedly at Early's direction, asked to swap it with the original copy on file in the clerk's office. Conflicting testimony about what happened was given at the State Ethics Commission, with the top judge in Central District Court saying he recalled Early asking why the documents couldn't be swapped. The then clerk testified he believed Travers had asked to switch the documents, but also testified he didn't believe Travers had crossed any ethical lines. The commission, after 9 days of hearings, dismissed the allegations against Early, Travers, McKeon, and Anderson. The commission didn't make detailed findings on the specific allegations in the case after finding that, even if things happened as alleged, the commission's lawyers hadn't proved it would be of a value substantial enough to violate the civil statute. Some commissioners criticized the manner in which the case was handled, while the commissioner who oversaw the hearing said he believed Early and the others were, quote, motivated to protect the rights of a criminal defendant who suffered from substance abuse, unquote. In his statement to the Telegram and Gazette, Early said the actions his office took were about protecting the basic human dignity of someone suffering from the disease of addiction. Quote, the Worcester County District Attorney's Office always has and will continue to show the same level of compassion while I am district attorney, he wrote. And now we'll get back to the
We'll take a brief break and be back in a moment.
A lot of people are familiar with various assistance programs that provide support for folks with disabilities, money troubles, or food insecurity. But did you know there's one organization which does good work on all three fronts? Welcome to the Department of Transitional Assistance. The DTA serves 1 in 7 residents of the Commonwealth with direct economic assistance like cash benefits and SNAP food assistance, as well as workforce training opportunities. Those served by the department include children, elders, and people with disabilities. And despite the misconceptions you might have heard, many of those who receive benefits from the government work regularly and are gainfully employed. The DTA mission is to assist and empower low-income individuals and families to meet their basic needs, to improve their quality of life, and achieve long-term economic self-sufficiency. The DTA assistance line is open from 8:15 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. That number is 877-382-2363. 877-382-2363.
You are listening to the reading of the Sunday Worcester Telegram and Gazette, a production of Audio Journal. Moving to the weather forecast. The five-day forecast is as follows. Today, we are expecting a high of 44 degrees and a low of 34 degrees. Clouds will be breaking up for some sun. It will feel like 40 degrees. Tomorrow, we expect a high of 63 degrees and a low of 42. It should be mostly sunny and warmer and feel like 63. On Tuesday, we're expecting a high of 64 degrees and a low of 37. Tuesday will be mostly sunny and mild and feel like 68. On Wednesday, we expect a high of 49 degrees and a low of 39. It should be cloudy and cooler with rain in the afternoon and feel like 47 degrees. On Thursday, we expect a high temperature of 56 degrees and a low of 51, with periods of rain, and it should feel like a 51-degree day. Today, the sunrise was at 6:19 a.m., and sunset will be at 7:20 p.m. And here's our report on the Worcester Reservoir level. As of noon on Saturday, the reservoirs were 102.6% full. Now we'll move on to the business news. Headline, The Purple Pig is Living High on the Hog in Marlborough. This is written by Barbara M. Hull, a special to the Telegram and Gazette. The Purple Pig Takeout and Catering in Marlborough is a new restaurant from Michael Winslet, an executive chef who has spent 30 years in the industry, most notably in fine dining and catering. The chef opened the Purple Pig at 505 Boston Post Road, Twin Borough Clarsing Plaza, in mid-February, leasing space formerly occupied by a pizzeria. Winslet said he had looked at properties closer to his Worcester home, including Twisted Fork Bistro in Sherriwet Valley. Twisted Fork had been permanently closed for a while when Winslet made an inquiry. At the time, the owner had a prospective buyer, and the restaurant remains up for sale. Last fall, Winslet decided it was time to strike out on his own, explaining that opening a restaurant was always in the back of his mind. He's originally from Texas, a state where barbecue is serious business, he said. He uses authentic recipes and ingredients, quote, ensuring that every bite is full of flavor and culture, unquote. Barbecue takes him back home, he said. At the Purple Pig, the chef's seasonal menu is straightforward with the introduction, quote, we smoke the good stuff, unquote. Smoked meats, handmade sauces, and from-scratch sides are on the menu. Texas all-meat chili leads the list of soups and snacks to include potato skins, pepper jack cheese, smoked beef brisket, pulled pork, broccoli, and roasted peppers. There's a wide selection of BBQ favorites from brisket to ribs, pulled pork, turkey breast, and smoked all-beef Texas sausage. The restaurant also has buttermilk chicken tenders, burnt ends, street corn, loaded baked potatoes, and sandwiches, which are Three Little Pigs panini, for example, smoked turkey panini, beef short rib panini, mushroom and truffle panini, and more. Salads and grains, and ribs. Combos and sides round out the menu. Catering offers BBQ packages and platters. Note, new seasonal menu items will be introduced next month and additional mac and cheese flavors. The Purple Pig is small and casual with several tables that seat about 8 people. Hours are 11 o'clock a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday, 2 to 9 p.m. Saturday, and close Sunday. Visit www.thepurplepigrestaurant.com. The business offers the same warming, inviting service whether you stop in for lunch, pick up food, or have the business deliver catering. The Hanover Theater presents The Twelfth Night and Judith at the Brick Box Theater. The Hanover Theater repertory will have William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night and Kate Bender's new play, Judith, running in rotation at the Brick Box Theater at the Jean McDonough Arts Center from April 11th to May 5th as it closes its second season. Although there's a gap of about 422 years between the two works, there will be certainly resonance between them, and THT's Rep's artistic director has said, although there's a gap of about 422 years between the two works, there will certainly be resonances between them, said the Rep's artistic director, Livy Scanlon. In Twelfth Night, Viola, one of the main protagonists, disguises herself as a man after being shipwrecked and separated from her brother. The title character of Judith is Shakespeare's sister, who poses as the Bard of Avon's brother to try and save his reputation. In both instances, the gender-bending nature of the stories lead to assumed and mistaken identities and playful humor. The full title of Shakespeare's play is Twelfth Night or What You Will. Asked if she saw them as two like-minded works to present together, Scanlon said, "I did very much so. Certainly there's a great deal of overlap in some of the scenes." The two plays have something else in common. Scanlon plays Judith in the play Judith, a one-woman show, and she's Viola in Twelfth Night. Brendan Fox, who has national credits, directs both productions. Twelfth Night opens for previews April 11th and 12th and will have its official opening at 8 p.m. April 13th with a pre-show party at 6 p.m. The production will have 13 public performances and 3 school matinee performances. Judith has an opening matinee performance at 2 p.m. April 13th and will also be performed April 20th, 28th, and May 3rd. The Hanover Theater Rep will also have an open house at the Brick Box Theater on April 13th. The Hanover Theater and Conservatory for the Performing Arts launched the Hanover Theater Rep in 2020 as a means for its own productions at the Brick Box Theater and other venues. The repertory presented William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar on Worcester Common in 2021. In February, it was announced that the Rep had exceeded a $1.5 million McDonough Family Foundation matching grant challenge, raising $1.583823 million over the course of 15 months. The grant challenge was made with an eye toward raising $3 million. The gift will allow the repertory to pursue inclusive casting, set equitable ticket prices, and choose titles that work well for the general public and student audiences. Scanlon acknowledged donors in the announcement, stating, "From the bottom of my heart, thank you for supporting this endeavor. I hope you will take pride in knowing that your generosity will, for supporting this exciting endeavor, make downtown Worcester a more vital, creative place." For the Rep production of the Shakespeare, Fox has set the play in the Roaring Twenties, Scanlon said, and the cast wearing costumes of the era. There's something about that time and place that seems to fit with Illyria with its drinking and reveille. A few years ago, the former Stage Loft Repertory Theater in Sturbridge placed the play in a 1920s New Orleans speakeasy. THT's Rep's Twelfth Night evokes the Gatsby elegance and indulgence of the time, Scanlon said. Also, the setting is just far enough in the past that the notion of people being stranded in a new country is still plausible. Worcester audiences have been able to see Judith come together. Judith is presented in partnership with Urbanite Theater in Sarasota, Florida. In March 2023, the Rep presented an experimental stage reading of Judith by Katie Bender at the Brick Box Theater featuring Scanlon as Judith. In Shakespeare's own time, the religious divide between Protestants and Catholics was still devastating England, and Judith comes to William's rescue over the matter. On a merrier note, women dressing up as men and causing confusion can be found in some of Shakespeare's most enduring works, such as Twelfth Night. As for what will happen with Judith after its Worcester run, Scanlon said, "We're not quite sure yet, but we're hopeful she'll continue to play on." And now a look at Central Mass by the numbers. 526. A historic downtown building will welcome a co-working office space in September. The property at 526 Main Street in the city's theater district will be the first Central Massachusetts location for Work Bar, a co-working space with locations in Greater Boston. Work Bar announced the new location, its 12th in Massachusetts, in a new release Monday. The 526 to 538 Main Street property was originally constructed in 1894 for real estate magnate Ransom F. Taylor. It was the previous home to businesses such as Money Shop Pawn Shop and the Muse Bar and Kitchen. And now the number 50. After 50 years of business inside a one-floor building at 1100 A Pleasant Street, Tatnuck Meat and Seafood's run has come to an end. The decision to permanently close results from a combination of declining business and health issues for longtime owner and founder Harvey Slarsky, according to his son Michael. Known for a wide array of meats and seafood options, Tatnuck Meat and Seafood's business almost always relied on customers who live nearby in the Tatnuck area. Harvey Slarsky, now 87, started the store as Tatnuck Meat Market at the same location where it closed at Pleasant and Mill Streets. 13.6 million. Old Shrewsbury Village, the longtime home of the town's now defunct Christmas tree shop store, has a new owner. According to closing paperwork in the Worcester Registry of Deeds, a Fall River-based entity doing business as 1000 Boston Turnpike LLC bought the parcel for $13.6 million from Yarmouth-Port-based Shrewsbury Village Limited Partnership. In the transaction, Zi Chen Zhang is listed as manager of 100 Boston Turnpike LLC, while Jeffrey B. Belizikian is listed as president and treasurer of Shrewsbury Village Limited Partnerships. Belizikian's parents, Charles and Doreen Belizikian, bought the Christmas tree shop in Yarmouthport in 1970 and expanded it into a chain. 141. After almost eight decades of business, Derrico's Market will leave its most recent location at 141 East Central Street, with the ownership renting out the space to a small chain of meat markets, according to a statement by Derrico's Market. Vitoria Meat Market, a Brazilian-owned business with five locations across the Boston area, took over the space last week. Derrico's Market, family, staff, and executive team would like to thank all our customers, supporters, and friends for their support and patronage throughout our many years at this location, said the statement. The owner did not detail plans in the statement. 494. The signs at the Denny's restaurant in Worcester were removed recently, marking the end of a restaurant that has been a Lincoln Street destination for more than three decades. The restaurant, 494 Lincoln Street, formally closed March 13th, according to the South Carolina-based chain. Deciding to close a restaurant is never an easy decision, and one that isn't made lightly, the company said in a statement.
And we will be back in a moment with the local news.
Would you like to hear news from Auburn, Grafton, Millbury, and Sutton that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Monday at 5 p.m.
And you are listening to the Sunday reading of the Worcester Telegram and Gazette, a production of Audio Journal. On to our local news. Lesson on Eclipse in Real Time. City Schools to Integrate Event into Monday Plan by Tatum Girding, Worcester T&G. On Monday, Worcester residents will get the chance to experience a total solar eclipse when the moon passes in front of the sun, turning the daytime sky dark. Locally, the eclipse peak will take place at 3:28 p.m. with clear skies in the forecast. Those looking to spot the phenomenon shouldn't have any problems. Shrewsbury and Worcester Public Schools are not releasing early that day. Instead, many classes will be incorporating the event into the lesson plan. Karen Moquin, a sixth grade teacher at Norback Avenue School, said while teaching about the solar system and eclipses as part of the curriculum, it is exciting that students can connect what they are learning in the classroom to the real world. Especially as science teachers, we're always told hands-on, authentic learning is the best way to get your students to remember what they've learned, Moquin said. So we've been gearing up for this for a while. At the time of the solar eclipse, Moquin's Google Classroom will live stream NASA coverage. She also said students are welcome to view the eclipse in person. In the weeks leading up to the eclipse, Moquin said her sixth grade science classes analyzed the path of totality, learned how to make safe eclipse viewing tools, and made models of the solar eclipse. The live stream, Moquin said, will allow her students to reflect on what they witnessed together and connect it with what they learned. One of her students will be traveling with his family to Vermont to be in the path of totality. In Worcester, the Equitarium is offering free admission to all afternoon on Monday. It has a schedule of events before the eclipse, including tabletop activities outside related to safety exploration, pinhole projector making, and some educator-led programs. The Equitarium will also stream NASA's broadcast. As for safety, Jason Gertman, Manager of Education and Programs at the Equitarium, said his advice is not to look directly at the sun without appropriate protection, whether with eclipse glasses or a solar filter. The Equitarium will have eclipse glasses on a first-come, first-served basis. Also front page local, Town Manager, Top Salaries in Auburn, by Tony Cossey, Worcester T&G. Auburn. The list of top gross earners in Auburn for calendar year 2023 was topped by the town manager and members of the police and fire departments, followed by members of the school department. Town Manager Edward J. Kazanoff-Fitz grossed $234,000+, followed by Police Sergeant Spiros K. Caperonis at $224,000+, Police Chief Todd R. Lemon at $187,000+, and Police Sergeant Luis W. Santos at $183,000+. Fire Chief Stephen M. Coleman placed fifth for the year, grossing $179,000+, while Superintendent Elizabeth Chamberlain followed with gross earnings of $176,000+. 12 other members of the police department also appeared in the top 25 list, along with four fire department members. And our last front page local story, Breakfast Club. Happy family of regulars enjoys food company at Miss Worcester, by Sarah Barnacle, Worcester T&G. The heavily stickered door swung open, and in walked a hungry customer. The man gave the three waitresses a smile and was met with an enthusiastic, "Hi, Dave," as he took a seat at the counter. A bubbly blonde waitress named Holly gave me a smile and said, "See, we know everyone here." It's easy to see why some affectionately call the Miss Worcester Diner here in Worcester the Cheers of Worcester. Kim Niskern, owner and cook, stood in the corner whipping up a fresh pot of coffee as she restocked various items at the end of the bar. She's been running the historic lunch car since 2003 and is quite the presence in the small space. Her pride and passion are palpable in every movement, every smile, every order taken. And by the time you've finished the coffee in your mug and the eggs on your plate, you've become family. Longtime regular customer Prentice sat at the counter reading the most recent copy of the Telegram and Gazette. "What did the teddy bear have for breakfast?" he said with a short pause. "Nothing, because it was stuffed." Chuckles over coffee is just one of the perks of dining at Worcester's most historic lunch cars. The stuffed French toast is another. "The crunchy is our best seller," Holly said while handing me a menu. "It's fresh toast dipped in honey bunches of oats and deep fried." The crunchy isn't the only French toast concoction offered. The diner is known for more than 25 different versions of the egg dip dish, including Fruity Pebbles French toast and the Meat Lovers French toast stuffed with ham, bacon, and sausage. The menu is vast and can be overwhelming, but it was easy to settle for the everyday special consisting of eggs your way, toast, potatoes, and a cup of coffee for $5. Miss Worcester has won countless awards over the decades. The eatery at South Bridge Street and Quinsigamon Avenue has been featured on several TV shows and sits on the National Register of Historic Places. Built in 1948 at the former Worcester Lunch Car Company across Quinsigamon Avenue, the years decorate the walls in the form of stickers, love notes, and historical relics. The images of smiley faces, local businesses with their logos, pot leaves, and even a Batman emblem all seem to complement one another, wallpapering the interior. Originally, the lunch car was used as the company's showroom, but was later converted into the functioning diner it is today, becoming the Miss Worcester around 1950. While ownership has changed hands over the years, Worcester's love for Miss Wu has only grown. Moving on to Sunday opinions, with more on the solar eclipse. Make your eclipse viewing spectacular and safe, by Dr. Aaron Zimmerman, guest columnist. If all goes as planned, a spectacular and potentially dangerous event will be seen in North America on Monday. All should make an attempt to experience, enjoy, and safely view the total solar eclipse. Proper eye protection will be key. Why will the eclipse be so dangerous? The sun is incredibly bright, and looking directly at it for anything longer than a few seconds can result in damage to the back of the eye. The ultraviolet and short visible wavelengths can overwhelm the cells in the retina at the back of the eye, and if those cells are exposed to super intense light for too long of a time, anything longer than a few seconds, those cells can be permanently damaged. If those cells are permanently damaged, an individual will lose some extent of their central vision. Due to the hours-long duration of the eclipse, individuals might innocently glance at the eclipse for a few seconds at a time, but then repeatedly make glances over the course of the event. These glances add up, and by the end of the eclipse, someone could have viewed the eclipse for a minute or two and put their eyes at significant risk. Why is the 2024 solar eclipse so special? In Ohio, it will be the first total solar eclipse observable in 218 years. The entire eclipse will occur over 2.5 hours and begin as the moon approaches the sun. Totality occurs when the moon is perfectly aligned with the sun, a period of approximately 3 minutes, and it is safe to view the eclipse without any eye protection. The moon will then begin to move away from the sun. Other than the brief period of totality, all other stages of the eclipse are considered partial eclipses and are very dangerous to view without protection. Which eclipse glasses are safe? The good news is with some simple precautions, such as wearing eclipse glasses labeled with the International Organization for Standardization, ISO, 12312-2, which states that the device complies with the eclipse viewing standard. That's ISO 12312-2. With these glasses, you can safely and comfortably look at the full sun or partial eclipses for as long as you would like. It turns out that these are too dark during totality, which is why they can be removed, as you will not see anything. Never use binoculars or a telescope without proper filters, as these can condense the light delivered to the eye and result in rapid eye damage. How do you know if your eyes are damaged from the eclipse? If you think that you have suffered damage to your eyes following the eclipse, please consult your eye care professional. There is no known cure for eclipse-induced damage to the back of the eye, but there are known and easy ways to prevent this from happening. Another from the opinion section. At St. V., the fault lies with tenant health care, by Raymond V. Mariano, columnist. During the St. Vincent Hospital nurses' strike, I wrote several columns criticizing the hospital administration and its CEO, Carolyn Jackson. As I saw it, the nurses were fighting for their patients. It was a noble cause. I thought that when they settled the contract, the issue of patient safety had been resolved. It appears that I was wrong. More recently, I wrote a column about the nurses' allegations that patients at the hospital were receiving substandard care. Nurses made some startling allegations, and at least one investigative agency found that the hospital was non-compliant with applicable Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, CMS, conditions. This could put the hospital's accreditation in jeopardy. Again, I criticized Jackson. As a result of that column, I received a number of emails from readers who told me about their own experience at the hospital, verifying the nurses' allegations. One reader claimed their loved one waited for hours for medication and they couldn't find a nurse or PCA, saying it was a nightmare. I was disheartened when a reader wrote that his 64-year-old sister was forced to sit in a wet bed crying because there was no nurse to attend to her and she was humiliated. Readers made other far more serious accusations. I have been highly critical of Jackson and her administration. However, as I reflect on it, I'm not absolutely sure I've placed the blame where it belongs. I'm guessing that her bosses at Tenet Healthcare, who own the hospital, know exactly what she's doing and that they approve. If they didn't, Jackson wouldn't still be there. Tenet's record. Based in Dallas, Tenet Healthcare is a behemoth with 58 acute care hospitals and 648 healthcare facilities in its portfolio. Its total revenue in 2023 was $19.5 billion. These guys are huge. Unfortunately, a simple internet search shows the Tenet has a sordid business record. According to multiple media sources, over the past 20 years, Tenet has been forced to pay more than $2 billion in fines and penalties. That's a great deal of money. But more eye-popping are the charges that accompany these fines. Here are just a few of the reported wrongdoings that I found online. In one case, according to a Department of Justice press release, Tenet and two of its subsidiaries paid nearly $30 million to resolve allegations of kickbacks to doctors for referrals. In another case, Tenet and a subsidiary paid $25 million after Hurricane Katrina to resolve allegations that they were ill-prepared for the storm, including that some doctors subsequently acknowledged that they had hastened the death of patients by injecting them with drugs. No criminal charges followed. Again, according to the Department of Justice, $1.4 million was charged against them for knowingly charging Medicare for implanting unnecessary cardiac monitors. More recently, Tenet paid $160 million to settle a class action suit for unpaid overtime to nurses and physicians. I don't know what it's like to run a major hospital, but allegations of kickbacks, implanting unnecessary cardiac monitors, and an assortment of other dubious practices don't paint a picture of a healthcare system that puts patients first. Tenet's response: these are serious charges. So I called and emailed Tenet's headquarters to give them a chance to respond. I never heard back. I guess the charges and the penalties speak for themselves. If federal and state investigative agencies find that the business practices at St. Vincent's jeopardize patient safety, the Massachusetts Attorney General should protect the patients and hold the hospital accountable. And we'll take a brief break and be back with more news from the Sunday T&G.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear. We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/mcb.
You are listening to the Sunday reading of the Telegram and Gazette, a production of Audio Journal. More in the Sunday commentary. Community Colleges Live Up to Their Name by Louis J. Pedrea, guest columnist. Each April during Community College Month, we shed light on the immense contributions of community colleges. The essence of community colleges is not only imparting knowledge, but also in nurturing entire communities, embracing diversity, and igniting the flames of possibility in every student they touch. They embody accessibility, affordability, and inclusivity, and bridge the gap between aspiration and achievement for countless individuals. Community colleges embody the spirit of inclusivity, opening doors and welcoming learners from all walks of life, and serve as the cornerstone of educational empowerment for diverse communities. They offer support services unique in higher education, such as food and parenting resources. However, despite their immense contributions, community colleges often face systemic barriers that hinder their ability to fulfill their potential. Financial constraints can pose significant obstacles for students, deterring many of them from pursuing higher education altogether. In previous columns, I've referenced certain programs that can help with the financial burden of higher education, such as Mass Reconnect, the Mass Grant Plus Extension, the Community College Nursing Scholarship, and the state's tuition equity laws. Currently, there are also deep discussions in the legislature regarding the potential for free community college in Massachusetts. This initiative, if passed, will help even more students have access to higher education, especially those who might see colleges unaffordable and unreachable for them. Research indicates that similar initiatives in other states not only increase enrollment in community colleges, but also transfers into four-year institutions and strengthening the workforce by providing more trained, skilled workers. Investing in community college students through these initiatives is an investment in the future of the Commonwealth. Of course, by increasing access, we also need to increase the resources of our community colleges to strengthen their support for students and faculty and staff who serve them. In closing, let us reaffirm our commitment to the heart of education, the community colleges that serve as beacons of hope for a bright future, one where every voice is heard, every dream is honored, and every life is valued. Louis J. Pedrea is president of Quinsigamond Community College. And in a letter to the editor, Warehouse Project bad for neighboring towns. Residents of Shrewsbury, Boylston, or the northeast corner of Worcester should be alarmed by Thomas Grisso's letter last week, Warehouse Project poses risk. Six warehouses are proposed in the area, two by a Worcester developer and two by GFI on the Holden Street extension. There could be six warehouses near Great Brook Valley serving thousands of trucks weekly. Of greater concern is the threat to Shrewsbury's sole source of water, the aquifer directly under 142 Clinton Street, where the first two warehouses are proposed. GFI can't identify the tenants of the warehouses. We have no idea what substances will be transported and stored over our water. How many household, industrial, and medical products today constitute hazardous products? One major accident could irreparably harm the aquifer and our water. You can't fix an aquifer. The town would need access to MWRA water, requiring extensive changes in Shrewsbury's water system infrastructure. For myriad reasons, these projects are a bad idea for Shrewsbury, Boylston, and Worcester as well. Scott E. Nolan, Shrewsbury. Moving on to some sports news. In Friday's local roundup, high school boys volleyball, Worcester Tech 3, Burncoat 2, South 3, North 0, Doherty 3, Abby Kelly 0, Marlborough 3, Air Shirley 1, and Keefe Tech 3, Framingham 0. In boys rugby, Algonquin 38, Lincoln Sudbury 36. Boys lacrosse, Leominster 17, Algonquin 1. Girls lacrosse, Northbridge 13, Bay Path 2. Baseball, Marianapolis 13, Pomfret 0. And in local college baseball, Army 5, Holy Cross 3, and Mass Maritime 6, Fitchburg State 5. Nine to Watch This Spring by Tommy Cassell, Worcester T&G. This is high school girls lacrosse. With the high school girls lacrosse season getting underway, Tommy Cassell takes a look at nine players who should make an impact this year in Central Mass. Grace Chiotta, junior in Algonquin. Jenna Koch, senior at Groton Dunstable. Riley Leary, senior in Wachusett. Fallon Lozano, a junior at Nipmuc. Kristen Podgorny, a senior at Bromfield. Julia Rubino, freshman, and Allison Stevens, junior, Tahanto. Katie Tildesley, senior at Grafton. And Lily Villaflor, senior at Westboro. Riccardi delivers inside with Brushback. Worcester native takes to mic with baseball podcast by Jennifer Tolan, Worcester T&G. J.P. Riccardi recently retired from his front office position with the San Francisco Giants, marking the end of his panoptic 43-year career in professional baseball, but signifying the start of his new gig as a podcast host. The Brushback with J.P. Riccardi debuted late last month, and its first two episodes, which featured interviews with ESPN's Buster Olney and former MLB player Frank Catalanato, were entertaining, informative, and insightful. I think we're going to have a lot of fun, Ricciardi said. Listeners can stream The Brushback with J.P. Ricciardi on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. The 64-year Ricciardi, who grew up in Worcester and starred at St. Petersburg Marion, brings his professional experience as a player, coach, scout, general manager, and executive, as well as his passion for baseball to the podcast. And he has some great ideas, stories to tell, and upcoming guests planned to share insider knowledge. Future guests include ESPN Howard Bryant and former Miami Marlins GM Kim Ng. Riccardi's podcast is national, but there will be segments on Central Mass baseball. We want to make people aware of the great history of baseball in Central Massachusetts, Riccardi said, and the people that have come out of here and the good things that have happened here. Riccardi is planning an episode on college baseball recruiting process. Giving the brush back with JP a personal element is important to Riccardi. For every episode, he opens the podcast with the same question. What made you fall in love with baseball? For Riccardi, the answer is easy. His father. The late Johnny Riccardi was an all-city high school baseball player in Worcester who spent time with the Red Sox. Ever since I was 4 years old, I always remember having a ball in my hand, Riccardi said, trying to play catch with my father until I could. My father instilled that love. It took a life of its own and became a flat-out addiction. And that's it for today. This local news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Program is funded in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind, the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, and Unibank. If you have any suggestions for our program, please call 508-797-1117 and let us know. We would love to hear from you. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android. This is Alita, along with Mike. Have a great rest of your day. And if you're staying tuned, following this broadcast will be The Economist, at 2 o'clock Business Week, at 3 o'clock The New Yorker, and at 4 o'clock, the African American Experience.
You are listening to Audio Journal, part of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Thanks for listening. We have more programming coming up next.
People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis. They're people you want on your team. And at the Mass Commission for the Blind, we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-392-6450. Or visit mass.gov/MCB.
Would you like to hear news from Charlton, Southbridge, and Sturbridge that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Wednesday at 5 p.m.
Are you elderly or disabled? Did you know each WRTA fixed route bus has a number of accessibility features such as a ramp to enter, a kneeler which can lower the bus, a securement area for wheelchairs and other mobility devices, priority seating for people with disabilities, electronic signage on the front, side, and rear exterior, a bicycle rack on the front exterior, an interior stop request sign, automated audio and visual stop announcements. Let us make your transportation needs easier and ride the bus with us. Call us with questions at 508-791-9782 or visit our website at www.therta.com.
People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis. They're people you want on your team. And we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. building an inclusive workforce where individuals with disabilities are welcome is possible thanks to Mass Commission for the Blind. Partner with them to hire individuals who are blind or visually impaired and reach your workforce goals. The success of your organization depends on the diversity of your team. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-